Stations on June Accord, we have the tone for Burn Cutoff on Delta B. Gratitum um Juno, welcome to Jupiter.
Ground control to Major Tom.
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVellante's Brian Noonan in for Ro and Anna. That, of course, the jubilant sounds from Mission Control as Juno entered the atmosphere of Jupiter on the 4th. After 5 years traveling 1.8 billion miles into deep space, Jupiter has arrived, or Juno, rather, has arrived in Jupiter. And all the scientists, everybody involved in the project, rightfully very, very excited, because there had been talk that this was a very dangerous mission and might not succeed, but it did, thank goodness. And the principal investigator, the man responsible for the overall success of NASA's mission and leader of the science team, Scott Bolton, joins us now on WGN. Dr. Bolton, congratulations on a very impressive feat, getting Juno to arrive in Jupiter.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, and I'm really excited that we're in orbit right now as we speak.
Now, let's go back to before 5 years ago when Juno launched. How long did it take? What kind of process went into trying to figure out how we would get some sort of observation up to Jupiter?
Well, 5 years ago we were launching, and of course we had to figure out the trajectory, and I was incredibly nervous as we sat on top of the rocket, worried that it wouldn't launch correctly. Mm-hmm. But we had already calculated the trajectory, and so we knew exactly that we had to go out. We didn't have quite enough velocity from the rocket to reach Jupiter, and it had to go around and get some extra velocity and a sort of a momentum boost from the Earth. And we did that in 2013, and then it was clear sailing straight to Jupiter.
And then it goes. And you were actually a couple seconds early, wasn't it? Juno got there a little ahead of schedule.
I think it was about a second. 1.7 billion miles, and we got there about 1 second early.
Man, you should run the public transportation system. That's not bad. If you can get that far and be on time or early, that's terrific.
I was impressed. I can't even go to the grocery store with that kind of accuracy.
Now, as people have been hearing about this and reading about this, we keep hearing about Jupiter is a gas planet. Does that mean there is nothing solid, or is that what Juno is hoping to send us back? Some information about that.
That's actually what Juno is hoping to send us back. We know that Jupiter is basically a ball of gas, mostly hydrogen and helium and a bunch of these other heavy elements that we're more used to, carbon, nitrogen, sulfur, stuff like that. But what we don't know is as you get down to the center, is there a concentration of these heavy elements? Is there a concentration of materials that make up rocky stuff? And maybe it's, of course, under incredible pressure. Mm-hmm. So even if it is made out of rocky material, it's not like the rocks we pick up on the sides of the road. It's going to be very different, but it may be solid type form in the middle. And that's one of the things Juno is going to investigate.
Now, is Jupiter kind of a template of how other planets were formed? It all started out as a big ball of gas and then, due to pressure, just condensed into something solid?
We don't actually know that. We're not sure how Jupiter formed. We certainly think that Jupiter is an example of how giant planets form. Okay. But what Jupiter holds for us as far as the importance of figuring out how planets form is that it was the first planet to form. It was the first step in the process. So a star is born, our sun, and then there's a bunch of leftovers swirling around it. And Jupiter uses up more than half the leftovers. So how does it do that exactly is the key to unraveling the mystery of, okay, so what are the next steps that eventually form all the other planets, including us?
And what kind of probes are in there? And I know toward the end of the mission, Juno will plunge itself in, basically self-destructing. That's part of the mission. But now how deep are we going at first through the layers? And then how long will the mission take before we finally call it a day?
So Juno does all of its science remotely. It looks deep into Jupiter, into the center, by using remote sensing instruments. It looks at the gravity field or a magnetic field. These are invisible force fields coming out of Jupiter. And we have special instrumentation that can see through the clouds by using microwave radiometry. And then we have a series of other instruments that look at the polar magnetosphere, sort of the aurora, the northern and southern lights of Jupiter, which are incredibly intense. But they're similar to what we have on the Earth, but much, much stronger. So we sample all of those. We don't actually go into the atmosphere to make the measurements. We can do it from the outside. And at the end, we plummet in and go into self-destruct, as you pointed out.
And what's the purpose of that? One, because it can't come back, right? So what's the other reasons for the self-destruct? Will Juno be taking readings all the way up until it destructs?
Absolutely. We'll take readings all the way through, and the only question is how long can we keep the antenna pointed at the Earth? Because if you take the data, you want to send it back.
Right.
And the reason you do that is actually to protect the moons of Jupiter, one in particular named Europa, which has an ocean underneath its ice crust. And we want to go investigate that with other NASA missions. To see if we can learn something about habitability and how life gets started, and maybe it even has life. And so you don't want to contaminate it. And the main reason you self-destruct is so that you don't take any risk that there's some bacteria or germ on Juno that somehow survived and ends up crashing into Europa, and then later we go back there to investigate it, and all we're doing is discovering ourselves.
Oh, that makes sense. I had never thought of it that way. Also, I'm wondering, as it's going through there and we're watching all these pictures, which will be coming back starting at the end of August, right? That's when we'll start seeing the actual live feed.
That's right. I mean, we're in a big orbit right now, 53 days long. So we come back to Jupiter really close up and personal on August 27th. So we'll have the science instruments are going to get actually turned on today. We'll start taking more pictures and we'll start releasing those as soon as we can get them. I mean, we do both like formal NASA releases where you goes out into the press, but we also, this camera is aimed to be used by the public. And so we'll start posting things for people to make pictures of. We're just getting the technical stuff ready to do that on our website now. And then you'll be able to watch as we get really close and come really close to Jupiter. And this time, the next time we do it on August 27th, we'll be able to leave the science instruments and the cameras on right until we go right over the pole. So you'll see that. This last time, we had to shut them off 5 days out so that we could focus on the engineering activities.
That's what I was just going to ask, why the cameras had to be turned off right at basically the last minute, the last couple of days, as you said. So you were focusing on engineering, getting Juno actually into orbit?
Right. It was such a critical maneuver, and everything had to go just right, and it was the first time we were going into this incredibly harsh environment. We didn't want to take any chance that the computer would be busy taking a picture, and that would interfere somehow with the rocket burn getting started and managed properly. So we decided, look, we can take another movie later. Let's turn everything off, make sure we get in, and deliver the spacecraft into orbit, and then we'll take some more movies after we're in orbit. So that was really it was to focus the brains of Juno.
Probably a very wise choice, because a success. And I mean, we saw the video of the control center when Juno actually entered orbit. We heard the cheers, but I can't imagine what the feeling was like in that room in Mission Control when the mission was a success.
It was an explosion of emotion, excitement, and relief. I mean, it was just everybody was so tense because we knew what we were trying to do was very, very difficult and challenging. And everybody just exploded in joy and kind of just a relief that, oh, wow, this is fantastic. And then, of course, when you hear the specs on it, and you're, you know, within a second or so of your timing after 1.7 billion miles, you also have this amazement of how did the navigation engineers manage to do that? I mean, there are some of our engineers are these guys doing navigation, and it's just amazing what they can accomplish.
Well, it's amazing to me that the brain power of you and everyone involved in these missions, because most of us stand and we look up at the sky and we see stars, we see the moon, and you guys and ladies actually can get there. And to me, it's humbling. It's that there's still a space program I think is wonderful. And so for us here on Earth, what practical ramifications does sending a probe to Jupiter have? What can, how will it, you know, we remember back at the Apollo missions and, you know, Tang and all that kind of thing. What kind of practical implications will we get from finding out what's going on in Jupiter's gas?
Well, I can't offer you a brand new orange soft drink, I'm afraid.
That's all right. We got one. That's enough.
Although I like Tang. So, you know, we're really searching for our roots. Where are our origins? How did we get here? And learning about the early solar system is something that I think every person wonders about especially when you're young. Mm-hmm. Who are we? How did we get here? Where are we going? I mean, these are fundamental questions. And when you go to investigate Jupiter in the way Juno is doing it, you're going after those questions. What was the first step that allowed the planets to be made? How did Jupiter start to gather more of these cosmic heavy elements, these carbon, nitrogen, sulfur, the noble gases? How did it get more of those than the sun? Because however that process worked, whatever the reason is that Jupiter has more of this stuff, it leads to us. I mean, the stuff that Jupiter has more of is what we're all made out of.
Yeah.
And so when we can investigate that, we're really going back into the history of us. And not only helps us understand how we get made, but how do we look for other planets that might have life? What other solar systems might have that? What should we be looking for? Maybe you need a Jupiter roughly in the distance that it is from the sun in order to create an Earth. Many scientists believe that. And so we're really looking for that recipe, that process of how that works, in order to partly understand how we got here and what's happening to us, but also, are we alone?
That would be a great answer to find out one way or another. The other question that I have, you know, we see pictures of Jupiter and there's the great red spot in Jupiter. Will Juno be able to tell us what's going on with that spot?
It will be able to tell you some things. I mean, you know, the one spacecraft's not going to answer every possible question we have, but it is going to address for the first time, you know, what do we really think is going on with the dynamics of the Great Red Spot? And that's because we're going to see underneath it. So you'll see the top of it, but you'll also see the roots of it. For a storm to last that long, it may mean that it has very deep roots, and we don't really understand that or how that works. It looks a little bit like a hurricane to us, but it can't possibly be behaving like a hurricane because it has no ocean or land underneath it.
Right.
So we'll see underneath for the first time to try to investigate how deep are those roots. Are the other storms nearby that seem to be getting sucked in to the red spot, or the zones and belts that are going around in at different speeds and different directions? Do those have different roots than the Great Red Spot? I mean, really what you're studying is, how's the weather on Jupiter really work?
And that
helps us not only understand Jupiter, but it helps us understand weather in general, the whole concept of the theoretical movement of gas and atmospheres.
Well, it is an amazing accomplishment, and I can't wait till you said August 27th is when on the NASA website we'll be able to start seeing some of the images from Juno, correct?
Oh, you'll see them before that, but that'll be when you see the pole of Jupiter
the
first time. But we'll take images as we're coming in closer, and you'll see that again. And you can go now to YouTube. We posted a movie of the approach, even though we shut off 5 days early. But it's an amazing movie that we managed to get because it shows Jupiter and its four Galilean moons going around. And that's the first time we've ever actually seen how planetary motion and moons orbiting really look. It's what Galileo first saw, but of course he could only see stills. We're now able to see a movie of it.
Now we get the movie.
I don't know if you've had a chance to look at that yet, but it's pretty fascinating.
I have not, but I will as soon as we hang up because it's an amazing thing. And again, Dr. Bolton, congratulations to you and everybody involved in the Juno mission. And for, you know, we look forward to learning as much as we can about Jupiter. And, you know, what's next on NASA's menu? Where are we heading next?
There's a mission that's going to launch to go to an asteroid called OSIRIS-REx. It's actually going to go there and get a sample and bring it back. It's a really exciting mission.
Very nice. Well, we appreciate your time today. And again, congratulations. We look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you.
Take care. That's Dr. Scott Bolton. He is the PI, the principal investigator responsible for the overall success of NASA's mission and leader of the science team. And now, the leader of our traffic team, Violetta Podramatic in the traffic trouble spots.